This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I went there. There were, it's a village of 3,000 people. 500 people were already there preparing the breakfast, chocolate and some pastries and coffee and all that. We're queuing at the sidewalk, been queuing there for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden someone started shouting, they are coming, they are coming. And we could clearly see the front part of a blue van of the Spanish National Police Force. Then it turned out that it was not only one, but there were 12 or 14 of these vans full of policemen, armed, protected with shields and helmets. They organized themselves in three columns, and they came towards us. All of us, all the people queuing there, people with kids, elderly people, middle age, we all backed up towards the door of the school that was that voting station, and we waited for them to arrive.
That was Anthony Vives, a Catalan who was waiting in queue with his family to vote in the Catalan referendum when chaos and unexpected violence ensued with the arrival of the Spanish police. Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed, and this is the Evening Edition. Last Sunday was to be a moment in history for Catalonia, one of Spain's wealthiest regions. Many of us would be familiar with its touristy capital, Barcelona, the city renowned for its artists, Salvador Dali and Antoni Gaudí. And Sunday was to be the start of Catalonia's journey to secede from Spain and create a new nation of their own, as 2 million voters made their way to polling stations to vote in a referendum. But what made headlines instead was the brutality displayed by the Spanish government through their police force. They seized ballot boxes, attacked unarmed and innocent voters, both young and old, and fired rubber bullets. The scene was chaotic, to say the least, and the visuals plastered all over media platforms of bloodied Catalans were disturbing for a democracy, not least Spain. I was lucky to be in Barcelona a few weeks ago, and even then I could sense the mood in the city was that of excitement and a certain sense of pride and optimism. The locals seemed united in their belief of wanting to be independent, and you could see that in the locals peacefully marching and protesting for their right to be independent and for this sense of self-determination. But I still didn't understand enough about why Catalans wanted to leave Spain and what the stakes were for them and the Spanish government if they did. All I knew was that Catalans' desire for independence stretched back decades, and at stake in this entire fight was the future of the region. See, Catalonia has its own language, a great education system, a fantastic football team, and the finest cultural and literary tradition. So to help me unpackage the details, I got in touch with Anthony Vives. You heard him at the start of the show, and he's the former deputy mayor of Barcelona and probably the best person right now to give us some context as to what's happening. Anthony, thank you for being with us on the show. So just how far back do we have to go to really understand where this push for independence came from?
Well, I would say that I think that we have to split this history in two sections, and I'm going to make it very, very easy and I hope understandable for anyone listening to us. The first thing I want to say is that Catalonia lost its independence in a war against Spain and France in 1714. So we have to go back to 300 years ago. Up to that moment, we shared the same king with Spain. We had shared the same king with Spain for 200 years, exactly as a part of Belgium, a part of the biggest part of Italy, Portugal, and a part of Germany and Austria. But there was a war, and we were conquered by the Spanish and the French troops. And it was more or less when Portugal, defying the Spanish king, split it away, but we were conquered, and a new story, a new history began. Then I think that we have to jump to 1979.
And this is part two of your history.
this is part two. So the first thing is that our listeners have to understand that we are a different nation in all senses. And, well, it happens that some nations conquer others, and you know it very, very well as Malaysians. So this happens. But what also happens is that the feeling of nationhood, of community, no matter the level of repression, because the language was forbidden, the schools, the Catalan schools were forbidden, people were killed or went to jail just because of speaking the language. Well, the language and the culture and the nation survived. Then we have to jump to 1979, just after Franco, the fascist dictator, died. Spanish society decided to give herself constitution, a democratic constitution, which recognized the existence of nationalities within Spain. That was very important, and this is written in the constitution, even though it was never developed. So it means that there was a push for the recognition just after Franco died in a very deep institutional crisis, as you can imagine, in Spain. But then, with the settlement of everything, all those desires of consensus, of agreement, were fading away. Catalonia was able to develop a part of the autonomy that was recognized by the constitution, but then the different readings of the constitution made by the constitutional court and the way in which the Spanish administration treated Catalonia started to light the fire once again, with the addition that Catalonia, as you said very well, is the most productive region of Spain, and we have to say is one of the engines of Europe. Catalonia represents 6% of the Spanish population, 15% of the territory, more or less 20% of the Spanish GDP, 25% of the exports, 45% of the value added exports. So you can imagine that our rate is very important. Before paying taxes, Catalan family income is the first in Spain. After having paid taxes, the family income of Catalonia goes down to the 10th or 11th position, which means that the level of stress that this society is bearing on the one hand, from the institutional, the cultural, the educational point of view, so the identity point of view, and from the other hand, from the economical point of view, is very, very heavy. It meant that there was a big agreement in the Catalan parliament. You have to know that we have a regional parliament, but we have mainly, what is more important, we have a different political party structure. The vast majority of the Catalan parliament, and I'm also making it very short, decided that we had to have the right to decide about our future by ourselves. 80% of the Catalan parliament is supporting the right of the Catalans to decide, which does not mean that the parliament voted for independence. The parliament just voted for the recognition of this right. It is a right recognized by the Charter of the Human Rights, Charter of United Nations, and, we wanted to vote. It is unimaginable what happened in Barcelona a couple of days ago, or in the whole country. Me and my family, for example, one of my daughter, 20 years old, she was heavily beaten, dragged by the hair, beaten my wife, calling them whores. And this is why today, while we're talking, the country, in Barcelona specifically, the place where I'm talking to you now, is absolutely frozen. No one, everything is closed. It's like a general strike day.
And before we get into the more specific details about your experience last Sunday, I'd like to ask about the sentiment of Catalans about seceding. And given your past role as deputy mayor of Barcelona, you're probably more clued in than others. And maybe you can tell me, what are some of the key issues and matters that are important to Catalans in this issue of secession?
The first one, this is a very, very good question, because if you had made me this question, if you had put me this question, let's say 6 or 7 years ago, people would have started talking about, I don't know, language or taxes or income or opportunities. That would have been perhaps, or unemployment. I don't know. Today, I'm absolutely sure, and this is why, this is what the Spanish authorities didn't understand. Neither, I have to say, and this is very sad, the Spanish media, because if you see the Spanish media, it is the only place on earth that haven't had the I don't know, the sincerity of informing of what was going on. I think that the first word is going to be dignity. That's I think that nowadays is a matter of dignity. This is why we have seen this surge, not only of people wanting to vote or people thinking that we had the right to, no matter if they were pro or against or indifferent to independence, but nowadays it is a matter of dignity. This is, as you saw it, I think you were here a couple of weeks ago, or 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you saw us, I mean, we were 1.5 million people walking out in the streets of Barcelona.
That's right.
In a country of 7 million. Any perception of danger, all the contrary, it was a family affair. It is a family affair. You could see all people. One of the ugliest images that we saw was how these soldiers and policemen and these, well, some of them were high-ranked militaries, were beating up very old people. And this is something difficult to swallow in a country that suffered one of the most painful civil wars on earth in the 20th century.
Yeah, and I think you have a point there, because, you know, these images of police violence for a country that has been a democracy for about 4 decades or so seems like it was from a bygone era of fascist leadership that the region saw sometime long ago.
Well, that's one of the things that have astonished more a part of the Catalan society. I'm perhaps a veteran in this sense, and that's not that strange for me, because I think that one of the problems with Spain is that the country formally embraced democracy. But democracy is not just a formal commitment. It has to be based on principles. And there are sections of the Spanish administration and sections of the Spanish society that have never thought that representative democracy and rule of law in the way we understand it is important. This is a society rooted in autocracy, and this deep spirit, so rooted, so unable to put itself in the shoes of the other part, as you have seen, when they just want to shape the reality in the way they think it has to be.
We're heading for a quick break. Stay tuned for more coverage of the Catalan referendum here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition, and I'm Ezra Zayed. My guest this evening is Antoni Vives, the former deputy mayor of Barcelona. He speaks to me about the recent spate of violence demonstrated by the police force throughout the region of Catalonia. And the police force are acting on behalf of the central Spanish government that sits just over 600 kilometers from Barcelona in Madrid. As 2 million Catalans were ready to vote as to whether Barcelona should secede from Spain, the police force swooped in to grab ballot boxes and manhandled unarmed voters who were left bleeding, with children crying and the elderly pushed to the ground. Now, the Spanish Prime Minister, Mariano Rajoy, has declared the referendum illegal. And just yesterday, King Felipe gave a speech condemning the Catalan referendum. Catalans were quick to point out, rather disappointingly, that the king didn't even acknowledge the violence that took place last Sunday. Now, Antoni, to help put things into perspective, there was a lot of apprehension and concern in the lead up to this referendum, and you could see this in public figures right across the region and in Spain. Well, people were encouraged to express themselves with the right to vote, but in doing so, there was a concern that there would be violence as well. And now, of course, this entire situation has happened this past weekend. How did the relationship between both governments get to this very frosty stage, almost to the point of no return?
Well, I think there are two reasons. I'm going to start by the less practical. The first reason is that they think that we are theirs, but we are not a part of them. They feel that Catalonia is their property, but they don't feel us as a part of them. And there's no any appealing project for any Catalan called Spain. We are not interested in being a part of Spain. And on the other hand, they are not interested in making themselves appealing for us. So they don't know us. It is very funny, for example, when the former Prime Minister of Spain, Rodríguez Zapatero, was asked 10 or 12 years ago how many times he had been to Barcelona. I think that he had been to here one or two times in his life. And it's only 600 kilometers from Madrid. But in a way, it seemed farther away than Madrid to Kuala Lumpur. So they are very far away from our reality. And the second thing, and this is much more practical, much more political, is that when you are in command, and this is my personal opinion, but I think it's quite rational, as I'm saying, when you're in command, when you are the prime minister of Spain, when you are the king of Spain, and you're the king of all the Spaniards, not only the ones that cheer you up, but the ones that perhaps are not happy with you, even though they are respectful, etc., etc. When you are in command, your obligation is listening and trying to understand and generating dialogue that has never existed, mainly in these last 7 or 8 years when the problem has gone deeper and deeper, because the Catalan society was discovering, not just at the political level, but at the economical level, businessmen or at the associations level or at the trade unions level, people and leaders were discovering that in the end there was no solution. It was impossible talking because at the other side, no was the only answer. So they were very happy having us, paying everything. They were very happy. We didn't speak in Catalan anywhere, nor in Europe. So this new permanent no has generated a huge level of frustration. And this is why people said enough is enough, and people wanted to vote, and we are in this point right now. Soldiers and policemen beating us up. This is what's tremendous. It is unbelievable in the heart of the European Union.
Anthony, you know, as mentioned, the Spanish government deemed this referendum illegal. And perhaps you can talk to me about the symbolism in proceeding with this referendum vote and what this means for Catalans and how they should be moving forward.
Well, the first point is that the Spanish government is lying. So when they say that this is illegal, it is false. The only thing that has happened is that the Constitutional Court suspended the referendum law, which does not mean that the referendum law is illegal at all. The Constitutional Court said that the referendum law that approved by the majority of the Catalan Parliament, a parliament that is recognized by the Constitution, approved the referendum law, and the Constitutional Court said it had to be suspended. And that's the only thing. So first thing, the referendum is not illegal. The second thing is that the Catalan Parliament, the sovereignty of the Catalan Parliament, for us is meaningful, so we decided to take it forward. The third thing is that it is not written anywhere that a policeman or any administration can anyone prevent to meet, to talk, to have discussions, to generate the website talking about independence. They have closed the websites. They have opened our envelopes. They have stolen our material. I'm talking once again of what's been illegal and out of the Constitution and out of the European Charter of Rights and out of the United Nations Charter of Rights is what they have done in the last 4 weeks with our freedom of speech, with our freedom of meeting. So when they talk about having done illegal actions, it is the full machinery of a state that claims being democratic that has put itself at the level of at the level of what they criticize of other countries that are not democratic at all.
Now, Anthony, walk me through what happened last Sunday through your personal experience of voting together with your family, friends, and your own personal community.
If you allow me, I'm going to start by the fortunate experience. I am the president of a cultural foundation that has its site in a very nice village called St. Paul, 40 kilometers to the north of Barcelona. And the seat of my foundation, of this institution, was a ballot station. So I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I went there. There were it's a village of 3,000 people. 500 people were already there preparing the breakfast, chocolate and some pastries and coffee and all that. There were people with guitars. So this place is right in front of the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. It's a beautiful place. And there was another ballot station, another polling station, a voting station, let's say 500 meters away from that other one. So half of the village at 5 o'clock in the morning was up getting ready for the votations. At 1 hour before voting, starting the votations, I left the village and I went back to Barcelona. When I was at the highway, I saw a column of 50 armored 4x4s going up to that village and some others. I called them to get ready for the attack. So people got ready. The attack happened later, not in that specific village, but in some others. So, but I couldn't follow that. So I went down to Barcelona. I arrived home. I took wife and kids and my parents. We went to the voting station where we had where we were supposed to vote. At 9:30 or 10, the Spanish intelligence started to hack the Catalan government internet IP and servers. So the system went up and down many times because the Catalan government was able to fight the hackings. So in the end, at let's say around 12 o'clock, people started voting with a certain normality. But what happened is that there was a huge queue, so we changed the voting station and we went to the one that in which we were supposed to finally vote. We were queuing at the sidewalk, been queuing there for 20 minutes, and all of a sudden someone started shouting, they are coming, they are coming. And we could clearly see the front part of a blue van of the Spanish National Police Force. Then it turned out that it was not only one, but there were 12 or 14 of these vans full of policemen, armed, protected with shields and helmets. They organized themselves in three columns, and they came towards us. So all of us, all the people queuing there, people with kids, elderly people, middle age, we all backed up towards the door of the school that was that voting station, and we waited for them to arrive. I don't know, the sergeant or the corporal or whoever, the official in front of the 300 armored men approached me and he said, "Please get out. You are not allowed to be here." And I asked why I'm not allowed to be here. And he said, there's an order that does not allow. I told him that we wanted to vote and we were peaceful. And please, I asked him to show me the judiciary order. And he said, "Yes, I'm going to show it to you." He took off his baton and he started hitting us. That's all.
More with Antoni Vives, the former deputy mayor of Barcelona, after the news. That's coming up right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is the Evening Edition, and I'm Ezra Zaid. Last weekend, about 2 million Catalans headed to the ballot box to vote in a referendum that would see them secede from Spain to create their own nation. Numbers show that Spain's wealthy region of Catalonia had a 42% voter turnout and 90% of them voted yes for independence. On the other side of the spectrum, we have the Spanish central government calling the referendum illegal because it defied the Spanish Constitutional Court, which specifically suspended the referendum in September. But the main takeaway from this past weekend was all the violence that took place when the Spanish police forces showed up to disrupt the voting process. Footage that has since gone viral showed police seizing ballot boxes, firing rubber bullets, pushing unarmed voters who were in their way, and even pulling women by the hair before throwing them to the ground. In his speech yesterday, King Felipe condemned Catalan authorities, saying that they have scorned all Spaniards with their referendum, and Catalan President Carles Puigdemont has announced that he will declare independence in a matter of days. Now, returning back to my guest this evening, Antoni Vives, he's the former deputy mayor of Barcelona. He's been giving us his point of view as a Catalan who witnessed Sunday's violence firsthand while queuing up at the polling station with his family. And now, Antoni, before the break, you walked us through what happened last Sunday. And I suppose coming face to face with such violence certainly goes against the democratic traditions that have been built over the last 40 years in Spain. And I guess this must have come as quite a shock to everyone to witness such heavy-handed tactics to suppress people from voting.
I think that this generates a point of no return in terms of emotional attachment to Spain. That's the first point. It is impossible for anyone having seen these images. I'm going to tell you something that I used to have a very good relationship with the Spanish Ministry of Justice, Mr. Rafael Catalá. I consider him a friend, and I heard him yesterday saying that Spanish police had done his duty honoring Spain. Right now, I have wounds all over my body. People like, exactly like me, elderly people, that's what the Minister of Justice of Spain considers nowadays honorable. So this generates an emotional breakup with this emotional attachment that one could feel with Spain. In the end, all of Catalans have. My wife is from Madrid, for example. So this attachment is broken forever. This is one point. The other point, you're right. I mean, if this is the democracy that they understand, my friend, this is not the democracy I want to live in. And now I'm talking to you, watching the street in one of the most popular quarters of Barcelona, and you see people walking, enjoying this general strike day, because people are very conscious that this is important for their personal life. Democracy is meaningful. I mean, having the right of saying what you think without having fear. So this culture of fear is very well known here, and we don't want to go back to that.
Now, the central government in Madrid says they aren't acknowledging this referendum, and Catalan President Carles Puigdemont has said that he seeks a better understanding with the central government. How do you personally foresee Catalonia moving forward on this matter?
President Puigdemont and the government have, they say that dialogue is what has to happen with no conditions, and they have even asked for an international mediation. I think that this is an intelligent movement and very sincere. I think that politics now have to come back to the table, but without conditions. If the Spanish administration puts conditions, the only answer should be, I think, an unilateral declaration of independence, because there's no other way out. But I expect that the pressure of Germany, we know that Chancellor Merkel called Prime Minister Rajoy. It is said that the pressure of Germany, the pressure of France, the pressure of Great Britain made someone think a little bit. Even though these countries, these nations or these states might say that they are against any kind of Catalan separation, blah, blah. But the truth is that something happened. And I think that something might happen in the next few days. I think that what's happening today in Barcelona and in Catalonia is very important. Stopping for one working day a country like ours. And I expect that intelligence is going to come back to and sensibility is going to go back to the brain and to the heart of some Spanish politicians.
Antoni, with all that has happened in these last few days, the whole world is watching with regards to Catalonia. But more importantly, the European Union is watching as well. And they have chosen to distance themselves from this. Obviously, the ramifications that would affect the EU on the back of the incident of Brexit, perhaps. What do you think EU's role should be in this matter? Do you think this is an internal matter that should be settled within the borders of Spain?
The last approach that you're talking, that you're saying, is what some people are claiming, but this is the end of the European Union. that's the end of my personal European citizenship. I am a European citizen because there's a European constitution that was recognized, and there's a European Parliament. So first of all, I'm a European citizen, and I want the European Union to protect my rights, no matter what someone in Madrid says. And that's the general feeling, not only of the Catalans, but the general feeling of most of the European citizens. And this is why the European Union is in crisis. The European Union is not in crisis because of the euro or because of the Brexit or because of Greece. That's not true. The European Union is a very, very, very strong political bet, very well understood by the citizens that work from 7 in the morning till 8 in the evening every day. We are European citizens, and we are very proud of it. And I don't tell you the ones that have the luck of being inside the Schengen borders, in which we don't have to show any kind of documents to move from Barcelona to Paris or to Paris until Berlin. So this is what they don't understand, that their legitimacy in front of our eyes is crumbling. And that's the problem of Europe nowadays. Of course, that we expect a certain reaction from Europe. We expect that one day or another, these people ruling the European Union will discover that what's important is a citizenship, and what's not important is protecting some facts that are in front of countries and that don't understand anything about what's democracy.
Anthony, this is one of those things where, you know, when you have states that want to achieve self-determination, more often than not, divorce is never a happy, collaborative effort. What are some of the positive elements that can happen should Catalonia succeed in this? And what are some of the steps that can be explored in moving towards a warmer relationship with the central government in Madrid?
I would say that the only perspective of the vast majority of the Catalan society right now is independence. That's the truth. People here are mature. People know that that's not going to happen from one day to the other. But I think that, as you say very well, we are used in a way to these transitional processes. So we see a transition towards independence. There's no trade-off right now. It's impossible thinking about not asking for everything when we have had tiny things in it. So I think that's what we all expect or what we all want. Now, what's going to happen? That's different. I think that Spain and the Spanish administration is going to be very reluctant to initiate any kind of talks. They are very weak on that. The only possibility is that perhaps Germany for us is key. Because I don't know, you know, that Germany has always, since the Spanish transition, has been in a way at the backstage of what the things happening in Spain in terms of constitutional construction. Of course, United States also very, very important. The movement that Mariano Rajoy made 2 days before the referendum of going to the White House asking for support, and then seeing how the Trump administration did not really support anything, which was in a way expectable, was pathetic. So I think that Spain will be reluctant to do anything, but if there's pressure, they will have to. So on the one hand, you have the Catalans, with the Catalans asking for independence, understanding that this has to be a transition, and asking for a global mediation. And then the Spaniards not moving at all, but with an horizon of having to do something. Otherwise, depending as they are of foreign aid for the financial survivance of the state, they might have to talk to us.
My thanks to Anthony Vives, the former deputy mayor of Barcelona, and his insights into the Catalan referendum. If you've missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast on our BFM app, which you can find on the Apple App Store and Google Play. Stay tuned for Untitled, the album show. That's coming up right after this. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.